An introduction and allegro by Maurice Ravel. That was harpist Lily Lasquin with a Cattura Villanova.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for tuning in here at Henry Ford Community College Radio. It is our pleasure to present to you the next edition of the exciting Dearborn Symphony Orchestra 2008-2009 season. It is taking place Friday, February 6th, entitled From Russia with Love. Again, Friday, February the 6th, the wonderful Dearborn Symphony Orchestra will perform in the 2009 part of their season. If you'd like more information, please call the Symphony office at 313-565-2424, or you may simply type in dearbornsymphony.org and get to their website. Again, Dearborn Symphony's next installment in the 2009 era, it's called From Russia with Love, Friday, February the 6th. Hope you'll enjoy that. Lots of great music coming from this wonderful gem of an organization in our own backyard. Enjoy.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. We're proud to bring you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will explore the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. And I want to take this opportunity to wish all our loyal listeners a belated Happy New Year. 2009 promises to be the year of hope, and I hope you had a great holiday season. And while I'm mentioning hope, I hope that that this year brings some relief to our economic system and the problems in the Middle East. And I also hope that our new president considers UFO disclosure. And if you recall, Stephen Bassett was on the show a couple months ago talking about his million facts on Washington. I hope that you've sat down and written our new president, President-elect, soon to be president, a letter respectfully urging him to look into the matter of UFOs and like phenomenon and release documentation on it to the public. So if not, please do. If you miss January 20th deadline as writing to our president-elect, I think you'll know where to find him after that. So you can write him then. So as long as UFO phenomenon has been in the forefront of the social awareness, the debate as to the visitor's origin has been ongoing. Some claim they are extraterrestrial, while others insist they are other-dimensional beings. Philip Imbrogno, in his most recent book, Interdimensional Universe, suggests that both hypotheses are correct, and that other paranormal and spiritual phenomena are all part and parcel of the same phenomenon. If our listeners will recall, Mr. Imbrogno was our guest last month discussing his book, Night Siege, The Hudson Valley UFO Sightings. He was gracious enough to join us again today. and to discuss the interdimensional hypothesis, his book Interdimensional Universe. And to refresh our listeners' memory, Mr. Imbrogno is not only a UFO investigator, but has been a science educator for the past 27 years, and with degrees in astronomy, chemistry, science, and education. So welcome back, Mr. Imbrogno.
Well, thanks for inviting me back, David.
Hey, it's our pleasure indeed. I have read both Night Siege and Interdimensional Universe. What's the full title of that again?
Well, it's Interdimensional Universe, the New Science of UFOs and Other Dimensional Beings. So, you know, it kind of like deals with the idea that our universe is a very, very big place and a lot bigger than we thought it was even 20 years ago, and that what we call our reality is only razor thin, and there are other realities all around us that interact with us. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a for a UFO book. I would call it a UFO book. It's sort of I consider, and others consider it, you know, quite groundbreaking. Even though the ideas of extraterrestrials being interdimensional have been around for some time. No one has really put the two together.
Right. Well, you know, I've told my story. I think I mentioned it last month to you. The fact that in 62, I had my UFO sighting, my one and only UFO sighting. And this thing emerged from one point in the sky, well within our atmosphere, a clear night sky. And it emerged out of a hole in the pinpoint in the sky in a cloud of smoke. And not cloud, but smoke. And the thought of, you know, of course, I was 14 at the time, so the thought of wormhole / vortex did not occur to me. But as the years went by and these terms came into play in my life, I realized that's what I was witnessing, was this craft was emerging from a vortex, a wormhole, so to speak. Now, whether or not this was a craft or the being, you know, occupied by intelligent beings, I know it was a craft, but I can only assume it was occupied by intelligent beings. Whether they were coming from other dimensions, other planets, or other planets through another dimension. I believe the latter was the case. Now, what would your take be on my particular case?
You know, that's pretty hard to tell for sure. We could be dealing with an intelligence that does use dimensional travel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have the technology to use dimensional travel. For example, in the Hudson Valley UFO, we were talking about something that's the size of a football field, yet in the sky, in many, many reports, it just vanished and reappeared somewhere else, not to be seen until it reappeared. It must be going into some type of dimensional space in which we cannot see. So, you know, it's very, very hard to say exactly, you know, who's using dimensional travel, who can just use, let's say, space travel. But the universe is so complex. I mean, in our reality here, in our universe, we're talking about possibly having 11 dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're three-dimensional beings. Where are these other extra dimensions around us? They're places we cannot turn to see. So, you know, you could have extraterrestrial visitors using these dimensional portals to travel or to stay hidden. And also, you have to consider also that we have the idea now of the multiverse, that there are an infinite number of parallel universes to us, each with 11 dimensions, and that at times wormhole, connect these two universes together, maybe one that's close to ours, and you have entities or beings or whatever traveling from universe to universe. And in this other universe that's close to ours, the laws of physics may not apply there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could be, you know, under different laws, and they're, whatever they are, whoever they are, could seem totally alien to us.
Right. Well, when some of the maneuvers that these craft appear to make and are reported, science has blown them off because, well, they just don't conform to the known laws of physics, the known laws of aerodynamics, the operative word there being known. So we blow them off. But if they are operating under, let's say that they are other dimensional and their laws of physics are different than ours, once they come over to our physical inhabitants, okay, wouldn't they be subject to our laws of physics?
Of course they would be, yes, but you see, they may have developed a technology where the physical conditions of the universe are quite different than ours, so that that technology will react completely different in our universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's quite hard to speculate on it. Yes, they would be subject to the laws of our universe, but who knows what technology they may have developed in their universe. Plus, we have to consider that, you know, if these some of these entities and some of these alien people and UFOs are from another dimension, they will be more or less subjected to our laws of physics, which we know. I mean, you drop a hammer, it goes down to the center of gravity, unless an opposing force stops it and things like that. But
like my thumb.
Yeah. But, you know, they would be subjected to our laws of physics, so they could develop a technology in which makes them do incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that there's so much to consider now with string theory and the idea of the multiverse. You know, years ago, people, you know, investigating paranormal phenomena tried to look for easy answers for these things, you know, for all the different things that happen. Okay, you know, we have a UFO the size of an aircraft carrier. We have these Bigfoot creatures walking around. We have all these aliens that people are seeing. I mean, you know, they seem to appear and disappear. Where do they go? If they're part of our reality, when they disappear and they're not being seen, where do they go?
Hmm.
The idea of a parallel reality, a parallel universe, would explain a lot of the things that we have called paranormal in the past.
Hmm.
And the label of paranormal, by the way, just refers to something that's outside our normal everyday experience.
Right, right.
And more or less, people have the notion that, you know, if it can't be explained, it must be supernatural.
Mm.
And, you know, what we're looking at, I believe, is probably a science of the future in which we understand these. We understand the multidimensional universe and the multiverse, and we probably will see that a lot of the phenomena that we have been calling supernatural or paranormal may come from one of these parallel realities.
Right. Yeah, I have trouble with the words supernatural because it tends to suggest something that is happening outside the laws of nature. And I don't believe anything can happen outside the laws of nature, just outside of our understanding of those laws.
Well, that's true. You have to remember that, you know, centuries ago when people saw lightning and thunder, they couldn't explain it. They called it supernatural, and they attributed it to, they couldn't understand it, so they attributed it to, gods.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're basically doing the same thing. I mean, throughout time, science has made the same mistakes over and over and over again. If people witness things that are not in the realm of their understanding and what they've been taught, and they tend to believe that it just doesn't exist.
Right.
So, you know, science repeats itself, repeats the same mistakes over and over again, and we're doing it today because more or less, you know, with all of these UFO sightings around the world, these people claiming to be having contact with an alien intelligence, people seeing all of this strange phenomena that's increasing, you know, science has turned a deaf ear to it because they just don't want to hear it because it's something that goes out of their normal realm of understanding.
Something they can't explain.
They can't explain it because they don't have the theories to, they don't have the equipment to document it, so it must not exist.
Yeah, if they can't measure it, it must not exist, but think of all the things 100 years ago, 50 years ago, we could not measure. We did not know of gamma rays and x-rays, and they couldn't exist because we couldn't measure.
That's true.
Today we can.
Well, that's true, and I believe that what we're labeling today as the paranormal is probably going to be a science of the mid-21st or maybe even 22nd century. We're going to understand it a lot better because we're going to understand the true nature of the universe.
Right. And you mentioned string theory, which is becoming quite popular with the scientific realm. I have kind of set string theory in, you know, as Stanton Friedman would say, in my gray basket because I can't wrap my mind around it. So, if you can, give us the string theory for dummies, will you?
Well, you know, it has nothing really to do with strings, but, you know, there's a good association of what it is. It, basically, our concept of the atom for a very long time has been that it's these little spheres. So if you look at the picture or the diagram of an atom in any chemistry book, it's going to show the atom as, tiny little spheres. And it's going to show the electrons as spheres, you know, so small that, you know, a proton, 100 trillion protons lined up could fit on the head of a pin. Mm. Now we're talking about that the proton is really just a manifestation of the strings. And it's not the idea that the universe is composed of these atoms, which are tiny little spheres, but strings. And each string would be something in the order of 100 billion trillionth of a centimeter long. Hmm. And these strings are under tension, and they're being vibrated by an energy source. And the frequency at which they vibrate, the intensity that they vibrate, will determine what type of elementary particle is formed in the universe. Mm-hmm. So if you have six strings that vibrate certain ways, you know, they have to vibrate a certain way to make a proton or a neutron or an electron or a photon or a lepton or a baryon and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these strings that are vibrating, making matter in the universe. And matter can change from one form to another depending upon the vibration of the string. Now, the problem with the theory is that in order for these strings to vibrate, you need a force of something like 10 to the 40th power tons of tension. Science has not discovered the force that vibrates the strings.
Mm-hmm.
But matter is being produced, and matter is changing from one form to another with the vibration of the strings. It's like a guitar, for example. If you put more tension on the strings of a guitar, they play different tones.
Mm-hmm.
And a six-string guitar, if you know how to vibrate the strings, you can play different songs. The strings in the cosmological strings, as they vibrate, they produce different types of elementary particles. Now, this corresponds nicely with the idea of quantum gravity. For example, before the idea of string theory, Scientists called the force that binds the universe together supergravity. But with the size of the universe, the idea of supergravity did not fit. The idea that the entire universe is connected by these lengths of strings that make up the entire universe and space and creating matter ties the universe together, and it could be the unifying force in which ties all the forces in the universe together. So although it's very revolutionary and no one has exactly proven string theory, it's a nice theoretical mathematical theory to explain matter in the universe and the origin of subatomic particles. Also, string theory predicts the existence of 11 dimensions because the strings can loop, which means that space itself and reality is looping into dimensions, like much like a hose. You look at a hose from a distance, it looks one dimension. As you approach it, you see that it's round and it has an inside, and it's multidimensional. When you twist the hose, you create other dimensional states. So strings could actually loop together, connecting other parts of the universe to ours. And when they loop around each other, they're closed, and they make other dimensions inside the loops. So this is the idea of 11 dimensions. Originally, mathematically, 26 dimensions was predicted with string theory. That was kind of like, it was saying that all of these 26 dimensions would have to have these strings loop around so much that they would just collapse upon each other.
Right.
So,
and if they loop around, that would tend to explain the possibility of going back or forward in time. Am I correct?
Well, going back and forward in time, but also going from one part to the universe to the other part of the universe in a very, very short time. Mm. Also, do these loops create these other 11 dimensions? Mm. And the current theory called the M theory puts like membrane-like structures between the strings, separating them, so that 11 dimensions can exist without the universe collapsing on itself in this multidimensional state.
Let's get back into M theory in a minute, but right now I'm going to have to take a short break, and I'm going to come right back to our special guest, Mr. Philip Imbrogno. I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. Stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of this.
Energy hogged a team. And break the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows.
And no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others. Except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy is being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs.
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
And he's got energy efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, energyhog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Are you an HFCC college student looking for a particular textbook? How about writing utensils, paper, or Henry Ford apparel? You can find it all at the Henry Ford College Store. The College Store carries textbooks, supplies, clothing, and the most widely used classroom software. Staff members are always on hand to help you out. The College Store is located on the main campus in Dearborn, right next to the Facilities Management Building. For more information on the Henry Ford College Store, call them at 313-845-9603 or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu to order textbooks and quick study guides. The Henry Ford College Store has everything that you need to succeed.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back. It's good to be back.
And hello, hello to you. This is Lynn, your host of No Boys Allowed, heard right here on WHFR 89.3. That's No Boys Allowed, where we explore the music of female artists who sing, who act, who play musical instruments, who speak quotable quotes. You'll even hear a recipe you might just like. Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 1 until 3 for No Boys Allowed with your host, Lynn, right here on WHFR, the station making waves. Where's that measuring cup?
Yes, do that. Tune in to No Boys Allowed here on WHFR.fm. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with educator, scientist, and UFO investigator, Mr. Philip Imbrogno. We're speaking to him about other dimensions and his book, Interdimensional Universe. And we were talking about string theory, trying to wrap our heads around that one. Now, he mentioned M-theory. What's M-theory for dummies again?
Well, M-theory is a variation of string theory, and I think it's one of the most popular ones. It places membranes-like structures in between the strings, so one string vibrating, creating certain forms of matter, certain types of elementary particles, does not interfere with another string. This also will act as a support for a multidimensional universe so it doesn't collapse upon itself. Imagine this. Imagine a ball of yarn, okay, with different lengths of string wrapped up into a ball. And our universe, our existence, is on one of those strings inside the ball of yarn. We're inside it, inside, not on the outside, but inside the yarn. And all of these other strings of yarn are all around us, and they touch our universe, but we really can't perceive them. Now, one of the things that they found out is that galaxies in the universe are being affected by some other gravitational force coming from somewhere else. This would explain the idea of a multidimensional universe, because we could see various phenomena as it interacts with our reality. Hmm. And this is what's noted with galaxies very, very far away. Some of the theories about this whole thing get very far out and very bizarre. And, I'm reading a lot of papers being published from MIT and from Berkeley in California and so on about string theory and multidimensional universe, but this is just coming out now. It's like these scientists are coming out of the closet. They were secretly talking about this years ago, but everybody was afraid to speculate because mainstream science said it's bad science.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order for one of these strings to vibrate and create matter, it has to have, as I said, 10 to the 40 tons of tension. Now, in a guitar string, you have the bass of the guitar holding the string so you can vibrate and make the tones. But these strings are floating in time and space. And another problem is, where's the bass to hold these strings? What gives them the structure and the support in order for all that force to vibrate these strings so they just don't get pushed all over the universe? Well, if that blows your mind, then we have to talk about the multiverse, We've talked about string theory just applying to our universe and the 11-dimensional states and the multiverse. But if you take this into account, into the UFO phenomenon,
right,
it not only makes, the idea of UFOs coming from distant star systems to visit us and interact with us, that some of the UFO phenomena could be coming from another reality very close to us. And this is why, for example, they've been seen throughout history. Mm-hmm. This is why descriptions of entities are different, description of craft over the years. We may be not only dealing with extraterrestrials, we may be dealing with multiverse entities and dimensional entities. As Dr. J. Allen Hynek said one time, He said he would be very disappointed if UFOs turned out to be just somebody else's spaceships from another star system. He believed that the explanation was more complex and that UFOs, some of them at least, seemed to come from what he called a parallel reality. He was referring to some of the early models of the multiverse and the idea of string theory creating all these extra dimensions in our physical space.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You also mention in your book megaliths and sacred places, Bermuda Triangle, Devil's Sea, Stargates.
Yeah, it's all there.
Well, are we referring to these as vortexes or places of entry for these other dimensions?
Yeah, well, you see, throughout time, the ancient people of long ago, the Hindus, the Druids, even some in Christian belief, they have the concept of parallel universes there. You see, the Druids believed that there was this other world that was very close to us in which there were spiritual beings, gods, that came into our world and communicated with us. The Native Americans believed there was another world, a spirit world, in which all of these strange creatures live. Mm. And the Hindu belief talks about a multiverse, a number of universes with their own laws and their own gods, and so on. Even in Christianity, we hear the terms heaven, hell, and purgatory. Where are these places? They're trying to describe parallel realities.
What?
Now, the ancient people of long ago, the Druids especially, knew that there were certain places on Earth where various phenomena manifested. And they believe that these were locations in which our world at times connected with another world. And they marked these areas by building, and the people before the Druids, by building standing stones and stone structures.
Mm-hmm.
And today we find that many of these structures are built over intense magnetic anomalies. You know, something that, you know, could be triggered, let's say, to open up a wormhole to connect our reality with another dimensional reality or even another universe. Now, one thing I found out is that in the Hudson Valley here, there are these stone structures.
Hmm.
And these stone structures I more or less came across by accident, even though they've been written about for a very long time with a big question mark as to who built them. Now, I found there was a direct connection between all of the UFO sightings in the Hudson Valley and the manifestation of paranormal phenomena with the locations of these stone structures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these stone structures are starting to be considered to be as old as 2,000 years old. In other words, they date way before Columbus or the Vikings came to North America. And whoever built these structures, whether they were Celts, Druids, Phoenicians, or so on, they knew exactly where to build these stone structures, where these anomalies are taking place, where today we are seeing a host of paranormal phenomena that stretches across the board, and, of course, UFO sightings and what we describe as alien beings.
Hmm. Well, some of these alien beings that we were talking about, you know, the average one, most prevalent is the small grays. However, there are people report seeing what we refer to as the Nordics that look like they're from Netherlands, you know, tall, blonde hair, blue eyes.
Most angelic in nature.
Yes, yes. And their mention of beings in robes. Now, you know, back in the Bible days, you know, another thing mentioned in the Bible, Paul mentions the seen and unseen worlds. Now, where's he getting that from? You know,
well, if this not. Is exactly the concept of parallel realities is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, science fiction writers also have talked about it long before, you know, scientists at MIT were writing all these equations for string theory.
Mm-hmm. Right. So also you mentioned the Bermuda Triangle. Many weird things have been seen in the Bermuda Triangle, not just people disappearing and boats, ships and planes disappearing, but other reports from people who have survived, come back from the Bermuda Triangle, and they reported seeing some strange things. Tell us about that.
There's been UFO-like activity there. Things disappear. I mean, back in the days of Columbus, there were like 22 ships that sailed from Hispania all the way to Spain, and only 9 of them survived after going through the Bermuda Triangle. What happened? They said the ships must have, you know, sunk during the whatever was going on, but no one saw a ship sink. They just vanished. This is one of the earliest reports of activity in the Bermuda Triangle. It was about 1497 or something like that. And Columbus, you know, knew there was something very strange about that section of the sea, and he tried to avoid it. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it was a shortcut from where they were in the islands in the Caribbean and wanting to go to Spain. But they report things like the sky turned green.
Right.
There was lightning, purple lightning and blue lightning and different color lightning without thunder.
Mm.
They couldn't see anything. The rain came down so hard that it started tearing the flesh off of the sailors.
Mm.
And there's stories about the reports that, you know, the captains were terrified and they lost like 11, 12 ships. Mm. The ships just vanished somewhere. And, it's like that's one of our first accounts of something bizarre happening in the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm.
And, of course, as time went on, we see that there have been, you know, numerous disappearances, including atomic submarines, aircraft, ships of all sizes, and many people have disappeared in this area. Some people feel that it's like a natural wormhole that opens up in our, you know, reality here going to somewhere else.
Right.
And that the people who went in there are not dead. They're alive and well, but they're in some type of other reality, some close dimensional state or in between the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if the string theory is correct with the M theory with the membranes, separating the dimensions would be like a limbo, a buffer. And, these people may be trapped in some type of buffer there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are places on this planet I think are natural portals to these other dimensions. And there may be an intelligence on the other side that has the capability of opening up these portals and visiting our planet and manifesting in a number of different ways.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who's been a guest on the show, a co-author with the late David Kaywood, you may know of The Other Sky is the name of their book. And she was on the show, and she has said repeatedly that the veil between dimensions is growing thinner.
You know what? I believe that.
Yeah. And that one day they will merge.
You know, centuries ago, the idea of elves, fairies, all kinds of creatures that we call mythological creatures now, or creatures or beings or entities of our legends, to people a long time ago, centuries ago, 1,000 years ago, these creatures were very real.
Right.
I mean, they had accounts all over the world of them, and all of a sudden, they disappeared. Now, the theory is that the universe is in motion. So in a cyclic sort of fashion, a close universe in ours may actually rotate around each other and at times merge together, allowing the two to interact with each other.
Like the holes that you're talking about.
Right, and I believe, you know, this is happening again.
Mm.
Because we're seeing an increase in UFO sightings, we're seeing an increase in paranormal phenomena. The barrier between the universes or dimensions is getting thinner because they're starting to wrap around each other and blend in with each other within a four-dimensional state. Mm. I think it's going to take very little on our part to create multiple wormholes into this other reality, allowing the two to flow into each other.
Mm.
And when is it going to happen? It's happening now, but I think there'll be a greater explosion of this paranormal phenomena after 2012.
Uh-huh.
And people may say, yeah, well, 2012, you know, everybody's saying 2012. But look at the things that are happening at that time. Our sun has been very quiet.
Mm.
In 2012, we're experiencing a sunspot maximum. And this sunspot maximum is predicted, according to the cycle, to be very intense, whereas the solar wind, the charged particles from the sun, will be more intense than they've ever been in history. And this is going to hit our magnetic field, charge up our magnetic field, causing these magnetic lines of force to charge up and twist around, causing dimensional shifts. Not only at this time is that the Earth in our solar system and the Sun is orbiting the galaxy. In 2012, just by coincidence or not, we're going to be lined up directly with the energy that's coming from the center from our galaxy, from the enormous black hole in our galaxy.
Mm.
That's going to add to all of this energy being pushed on the Earth. The third thing is that as the Earth revolves around the Sun, it also rotates. But it rotates somewhat like a top. If you ever spin a top, you'll notice that it wobbles.
Right.
We're approaching the end of the 25,000-year cycle of the precession of the equinoxes, whereas when the Earth goes on its axis, it's like almost like tilts a little bit, then pushes itself back up again, almost like the top wobbling, wanting to fall over, but the forces push it back up. We're experiencing that part of the Earth's cycle in its rotation and revolution, and by coincidence, it's going to happen right around the 2012 mark.
Yeah, that's another show. But hold that thought again. We're going to have to take a break. I need to remind our listeners that they're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're going to be right back with our special guest, Mr. Philip Imbrogno, talking about interdimensional universe. Don't go away. More than 100,000 people in Michigan, 30,000 of which are children. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan exists to ensure these individuals and their families receive the resources and support necessary to live normal and productive lives. As the only statewide nonprofit organization that focuses entirely on seizure disorders, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan enhances lives and changes communities by making it easier for people with epilepsy to live in society. Whether through its programs such as Camp Discovery, Living Well with Epilepsy, or Epilepsy Entertainment Gatherings, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan sets out each day to act as ambassadors for those coping with this condition. For more information regarding these and other programs, volunteer opportunities, or how to donate, feel free to visit the Foundation's website at www.epilepsymichigan.org. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, not another moment lost to seizures.
Thinking about going back to college but don't have anyone to care for the kids?
You're absolutely correct.
The HFCC State Licensed Child Activity Care Centers offers child care for children of HFCC students, staff, and the public.
Isn't that lovely? Woo!
The Child Activity Care Center is dedicated to providing quality care for toilet-trained children from ages 2.5 to 12 years old.
Oh, goody!
Your child is in great supervision with a child-teacher ratio of 5 to 1, which also allows for attention to be given to individual needs.
Isn't that something?
The center is open Monday through Thursday, 6:45 a.m. to 10:15 p.m. and Fridays from 6:45 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 313-317-6527 for more information or visit HFCC's main campus at 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road in Dearborn. The HFCC Child Activity Care Center.
Meep, meep.
That's right, King Harvest has surely come. Right here to WHFR Dearborn, the only station making waves. Come join me, your host, King Harvest, for my new show, Sunday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll be bringing in the sheaves, a bumper crop with the best modern indie musicians mixed with distinguished past masters. Remember, that's King Harvest, 6 to 8 Sundays on WHFR, the only station making waves.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio, WHFR.FM on your computer. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Philip Imbrogno, author and scientist, author of Night Siege, the Hudson Valley Sightings, and his most recent book, Interdimensional Universe, and we're talking about the interdimensional universe right now. Now, Mr. Imbrogno, this would go right in line with dimensions crossing over one onto the other. In your book, Night Siege, you talked about this tremendous triangular or boomerang-shaped UFO that hovered over the nuclear power plant there in Hudson Valley. And I understand that you were told that, although you didn't put it in your books, that beings were witnessed coming through the walls. And is that true?
Well, that's true. You know, even after the sighting, I was getting information because people were told who worked at the plant, whether you were in security, a scientist, or if you were in administration or secretarial or so on, they were told to keep quiet about it.
Right.
And the thing is that at all hours of the night, there were reports of alien-like beings, you know, gray-like beings walking through the walls into the reactors with some type of instruments as if collecting, you know, energy, gamma rays or something, you know. And then, you know, disappearing, and these scientists are just watching these creatures come through the walls, do their thing with the reactor, and no one seemed to, like, you know, want to interfere with them. They just watch them. So what happened is that Indian Point at that time supplied a number of government operations in the area, including an NSA tracking station in New York, and there was a power drain. And so they kind of, like, could not find what was causing the power drain. Now, when the reports of these alien-like creatures were coming through the walls, you know, people were afraid who were running the plant that this intelligence, these beings, they appeared after the UFO sighting over the plant. They were, like, you know, draining the power from the reactor and using the energy for something. So what happened is that an investigation started, and the reactor was overrun by all of these, you know, people who had all these government IDs and, you know, plainclothes men, probably, you know, from some secret organization. Mm. And someone came in to the reactor and identified himself to the secretary as being Colonel some so-and-so. And she overheard a conversation this Colonel so-and-so, he was in civilian clothes, had with one, you know, with her boss.
Mm-hmm.
And they walked away from her and they were talking, you know, quietly. I guess they didn't want her really to listen in.
When you say they, who are we
speaking? The administrator from the plant and this colonel character.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, you know, the administrator was kind of like putting his hands on his head and going, you know, like he didn't see, didn't know what to tell this guy or whatever. And then this government man, this colonel, he loses his temper and he yells out loud enough so that the secretary could hear what he was saying. And he said, I don't give an F if they are from outer space, shoot them. So, I mean, you know, and then they found out later that this reactor had a crack in its casing and it was leaking radioactive gas and vapor out into the environment. Mm. But this all took place after the UFO sighting. Is there a connection? I think so.
Hmm. A connection. A connection with the UFO. Now, was the object over the plant at the time that these beings were coming through the walls?
No. The object came over the plant. It hovered over the only reactor that was operational at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then a gunship, a helicopter gunship, was dispatched from Camp Smith. And the helicopter came around the object, and it was told not to fire on the object, just follow it. Then the object moved off, went through the Hudson, went across the Hudson, very slowly, like gliding, and then, poof, it disappeared. I mean, this object was reported to be like 900 feet from end to end, with massive gray metal, dark metal-like material, and one of the guards inside the reactor who was in the security console said he had to pan his surveillance camera 180 degrees to get this object in. Now, the beautiful thing about this is that a fellow by the name of Carl Patrick, who at that time was the spokesperson and one of the administrators for Indian Point Complex Number 3, officially in the paper confirmed the sightings. But he said the reactor was in no way affected. Oh. And when he was asked by the reporter, we have rumors and we have information that your security people fired upon this object. He said, I will not confirm or deny if they fired upon the object, but they did what was necessary to protect the plant.
Okay, now, when this colonel said, shoot him, are they talking, was he talking about shoot the object or the beings that were inside the building?
No, he was talking about the beings that were coming in the building after that. When the object moved off, the beings started appearing in the reactor casing area. I mean, they were appearing in an area that was, you know, a bit dangerous to go down to unless you were wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Yet they were just coming in, you know, in through the walls, dressed up in a dark, you know, jumpsuit-like.
Right.
And holding an instrument and then doing what they had to do, then walking back out of the walls. And this occurred, from what I understand from the reports I got, like about 7 or 8 times over a period of 3 months.
Is it possible that there was a problem, possibly a meltdown about to occur, and they were trying to stop that?
You know, some people do believe that because what happened is that after the UFO appeared, they found a crack in the casing of the reactor, and it was leaking radioactive stuff out. You see, this reactor complex is government-operated.
Mm.
It not only supplies the energy for the New York City subway system, but it also supplies the energy for a number of secret bases in New York operated by the NSA. So anything that goes on with this reactor is completely kept secret. But then again, when you have something 900 feet long coming over the plant being seen not only by people at the plant, but the area around Indian Point is populated. And when you have hundreds of people watching it from the outside of the plant as it's over the plant, you can't deny what happened. Yet, everything was covered up quite nicely. And over many, many months, even into the years, people outside of that area just forgot about it. But the people who live in that area and the New York State Power Authority police officers who were there that night still say to this day that whatever this was, it was not part of this world.
No.
But it is one of the only cases in which a UFO was 100% confirmed as being over a nuclear reactor.
Now, some of the reasons given for UFO visitation is we might affect their planet slash their galaxy with our nuclear weapons and take our nuclear weapons into space. Wouldn't it be more logical if there are parallel universes that nuclear power, if used incorrectly, would certainly affect these universes that are theoretically right next to us, right here with us? Understand what I'm saying?
An atomic blast produces a very, very powerful electromagnetic pulse.
Mm-hmm.
This electromagnetic pulse would have the ability to cross over dimensions. Right. Now, it's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, in legends of, let's say, these beings that exist in these other dimensions, I mean, talking about these other worlds, for example, in the Middle Eastern belief, they believe that there is a close world, very close to our own reality, and in that world, there are beings or creatures that they call the jinn who live there. And they say the jinn are very concerned about our world because the things we do in our world affect their world, and sometimes they just get very angry when something happens in this world that hurts one of their own people in their world. But when you take this legend into account, you see, yes, we see the idea that there may be intelligent beings in a parallel reality very close to us that are very concerned about some of the things that we're doing because it's affecting them.
Well, that's not far-fetched because we have the same in Christianity, in Judaism. We have the same in all religions. These angels, shall we say, spirits, God himself, if you believe in a spiritual creator, you know, spiritual beings, you automatically believe in another dimension. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Mm-hmm.
And some people may not interpret that. For example,
right.
I have an aunt who's very, very old, and she's very old-fashioned Italian. And she believes in all of these, you know, angels, and she believes in all of these, you know, fallen angels and saints and everything, and they all live in this place, you know, that outside of our world.
Mm-hmm.
So at one gathering, you know, she came up to me and she said, "Oh, are you still, you know, with that stupid stuff with the UFOs and the other stuff about the other dimensions? There are no other dimensions." And I tried to tell her this is what she really believes, but, you know, she's interpreting it and using a language
yeah.
for her time and her education.
That's it.
But we're just talking about the same thing.
That's it.
But she won't accept it,
yeah.
you know, because I don't add religion
right.
into
traditional,
her beliefs.
Traditional religion. Mr. Philip Imbrogno, I want to thank you so much. The name of your book, the name of his book is Interdimensional Universe. Check that out. Thank you so much for joining us. We're running a little short on time, but I do appreciate you coming back and being so gracious as to talk to us again.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure once again, David.
Thank you. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now being archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on the forum button on WHFR's homepage. And We Are Not Alone is now being archived at BlackVaultRadio.com, as well as on my website, UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. We're proud to be bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Well, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2009. My name is Bill Keith. It's time for Light from the Underground. I haven't been here for the last couple weeks, and it's nice to be back in the studio with a chance to play some great music for you. This past week, we've been doing our best ofs for 2008. And of course, I was supposed to do that last Saturday, but was out of town. So thankfully, John Bomarito and Lynn stepped in and covered my 2 hours, and I appreciate all their help with that. But I still want to do my best of 2008. Not that it really probably matters to a whole lot of people, but I don't know about you. I really enjoy looking at best of lists. I was just at a record store this morning,